Great. Well, hello. Welcome.
Thanks.
Sandy, it's a real privilege to have you here. Have you been to St. Alfred's before?
Not for a service. I think I've been here for a couple of weddings and other kinds of events. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Haven't been up here.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about your work.
I work at the University of Melbourne, so I have two jobs there. I'm a bit of a double agent. So I work for the School of Maths and Stats as mostly doing consulting, but a bit of research and teaching. And then I also work for the Australian Fellowship of Evangelical Students, which you're probably familiar with because of the Christian unions around Australia. But I'm particularly focused on working with researchers at the uni, so postgrads and academic staff, so any of those sorts of people, and that ministry is there to encourage them. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about the Simeon Network and how it was that you got involved in that.
Yeah, sure. So it's named after Charles Simeon, who was a minister in Cambridge to the university there. He ministered there for 54 years, so the Simeon Network has a bit of catching up to do. We've been going for about a decade. But I got involved because I was doing a PhD in statistics at Melbourne Uni, and I'd loved being involved with the Christian Union as an undergrad, and I was looking for something similar and found it didn't really exist. There was a Bible study group, but the Simeon Network had just started nationally then, so I was keen to get involved. I think, you can see there a little catch cry up there, which is bringing Christ to the university and through the university to the world. And I think in this ministry, we're just acknowledging that academics at university have a lot of influence. So they have influence at the university itself through their research and teaching, but they also have an opportunity to have an influence in the world more broadly because they're often given a bit of a platform for that. And I think science in particular, that's the case. I think our society gives scientists a lot of authority, probably more authority than we deserve, actually. But I think as a Christian in science, you have a particular opportunity and privilege being in that role. As an example, I recently was shown by a friend some videos of some Muslim religious leaders talking about how the Quran contains sort of scientific knowledge that didn't exist at the time that it was written, and that they're trying to use that as an example to give the Quran authority. And I think they wouldn't have done that. I think even 10 years ago, that wouldn't have been a priority. But now there's this view that, well, science has power. And so if we can say that the Quran has scientific information, then it'll have credibility. So it's a bit of a change. As Christians, we want to be equipped also to contend for a Christian worldview and testify to the Lordship of Jesus. Being a Christian at university is also hard. So one of the aims of our network is to provide fellowship and spiritual resources to people for that role. One thing I find that happens in this kind of area, and I think that's true for anyone who's studying, is that you invest a lot of time in your studies, and so your knowledge of your discipline, particularly if you're a researcher who has a very narrow discipline, your knowledge is going up and up all the time. And if you neglect your faith, then it's the gap starts to grow, and I think you start to see your faith as irrelevant or anti-intellectual, which of course is not true, but if you've allowed that to happen, I think that can be a problem. So we really want to support people to grow in their faith as well and to see how the two are integrated. You said I could do a little plug. I put some flyers out on your flyer table. So if you know anyone who's involved in research, or if you've got any aspirations, please grab a flyer and investigate what we're on about. It's an exciting ministry to be involved in. So
great. Yep. Absolutely, and please do grab them. They're just out there on the trestle table. And it's fantastic. We need to be aware of the networks that are available to support Christians in different spheres. And so even if you just take one, you file it away, you just keep it on record and share it with a friend one day.
That's right, yeah, and that's why we call it a network, because being connected is actually what's going to help foster our faith in that area.
Now, you're a statistician. So how did you get into statistics? Did you find that you were a mathematical genius as a child?
No, in fact, I'm going to contend that I think stats is the easiest kind of maths, which is probably a bit controversial, but mathematics is really in my blood. So both of my parents were maths teachers, and actually they ended up doing educational research. So both doing maths and research, it was a legitimate option for me. And when I was growing up, we had, all these kind of maths puzzles to do at home. And my dad used to give us times table quizzes, my sister and I, to compete with each other. So it was kind of, it was pretty natural that I'd end up doing this kind of thing. And I think for most kids, their parents expect them to leave university at some point and get a real job. But my parents, I mean, it was a legitimate option. And I remember when I told my dad I wanted to do honours in stats, he said, "Oh, look, I hadn't wanted to say anything before because I didn't want to pressure you, but I'm just so proud." And so I was like, okay, yeah, this is what I've grown up into. But yeah, I wouldn't say I was a maths genius. Actually, I think statistics is more straightforward than kind of high-level maths. I'm in a department full of people who do this kind of research, and, you know, high-level maths, it gets abstract really fast, and I think it takes a certain kind of person to be able to to be able to study something when you can't rely on your intuition anymore. And I really value that people do research in mathematics because it's investing in long-term sort of results. But I'm really grateful that I get to do stats where I really see kind of, yeah, I can apply it to real-world problems straight away and see that. That's a nice part about it.
Mm. Great. Well, what exactly then does a statistician do in the real world?
Yeah, I thought I should at this point apologise that I feel like I'm not really a classic scientist. You're probably expecting me to be wearing a lab coat or something like that. But mostly the kind of science that I do is sitting at a computer. And a lot of modern science is like that now. It's not the sort of, yeah, cliche that you expect. And my work is very applied, so I'm often helping researchers do their own research and helping train them in research skills. So maybe designing an experiment or writing a survey, analysing the results, presenting it, making graphs, interpreting it, that kind of thing. So very applied. I did want to give you an example. So I've been doing a lot of work for the Department of Agriculture, and this focused on quarantine screening of cargo and passengers. And so I don't know if you've travelled internationally, you've probably found that you have to declare if you bring in food or plant material, anything they expect will contain a pest or a pathogen. And they also sometimes, you know, if you've been hiking, they want to look at the bottom of your shoes to make sure you haven't got any bugs there too that have hitchhiked. And this is kind of actually quite serious. Like these things can pose a big threat to Australia's unique flora and fauna. So that's why they're interested. But we did some risk modelling, and one of the things we did was with male seizures. So I think I actually realised I skipped a photo. If you want to skip ahead to the map, can you find that one? That was just my proud auntie moment. This is some of the results. These hotspots are where male items that they'd seized that had suspicious material were sent. And I thought this was a really interesting example. So that bottom kind of, well, you can see it there, the bottom right-hand dot there, that's Clayton, so that's Monash Uni. And the one just a bit above, that's Deakin, that's in Burwood. The one in the city, that's my uni and RMIT, clustered there together. And then the top right up there is La Trobe. So we found it seemed that it was where unis were, and actually we did analysis and found that the number areas that had a large number of international students living there was a big factor. And so we realised it wasn't kind of criminal behaviour of people, you know, importing in things they shouldn't, but just we think parents sending care packages, you know, of food and, you know, there was traditional medicines and that kind of thing being sent. And so a really great natural outcome of that was that the ag guys were able to design some kind of information material to hand out at universities that said this is what you shouldn't send into Australia in the languages of some of the international students. So, yeah, that was quite cool to see that being used in practice. Absolutely. Just by way of example. Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about your faith. Have you been a Christian for a long time?
So similarly, as well as being mathematicians, my parents were Christians as well, so I went to church and Sunday school youth group. All of those kinds of things. And I remember my childhood being a safe space for me to explore that, which is a blessing. But I think the thing that really made me take my faith more seriously was when my friends started to question it. I think I'm quite grateful that they did. I'm super grateful because I think before that I just kind of assumed a lot and hadn't thought things through, which that's part of life. And being a scientist too, you have to make assumptions all the time, but you're supposed to be aware of the assumptions you're making and define and defend them. So, yeah, I was grateful for that prompting. And I think exploring with youth leaders and when I came to uni, evidence from the Bible and the way it kind of testified to things I experienced in the world, that was important. But I think the main thing, I was just won over by the mercy and love of God in Jesus. So you know, our biggest problem is that we've rejected God as our creator and our Lord, and God has solved this problem. He's the greatest problem solver of all time, and he's done that in the death and resurrection of Jesus. So I put up the Bible reading tonight. It was sort of a bit of a cheeky counter to put up tonight's Bible reading. It's just a reminder of not to get too caught up in our kind of human pursuits for knowledge, because I think in Jesus, what we see God doing, what we're reminded of in this reading, is that as smart as we think we are, that actually God's solution is the one that we wouldn't have come to on our own, because it, the cross, it actually looks like foolishness, it looks like weakness, and that's because in it Jesus is humbling himself, he's sacrificing himself in our place. But I think that's what love is, actually, and that's why we can be confident in God's care for us. We don't have to pluck that from thin air. Like, reading the Bible, I realised that actually it's okay to question things, and God doesn't demand faith without evidence. The Bible's full of stories of people grappling with faith and trying to understand the world through the Bible, through God's truth. And it's also full of affirmations of God's goodness and his attentiveness to us as well. Yeah, they're the kind of things that, saved me and kept me.
Yeah. Great. Now, a lot of people in our world today think that there is a conflict between being serious about science and being a serious Christian. Is this a problem for you?
The short answer is no. As I said, I grew up in a family where, you know, both science and Christianity were kind of valued. And so, again, I didn't really, I wasn't nervous about that or hadn't really even identified the conflict until I had other people kind of ask me about it. But obviously I do recognise that there are perceived conflicts at least and things that we need to be careful in thinking about. But I want to emphasise, I guess, that this is partly a matter of perspective, and this kind of issue, it's not unique to the faith and science interaction. So, you know, an ancient historian is going to seek to understand the past in a different way to an evolutionary biologist, and that's okay. That doesn't mean that they're incorrect necessarily in their different perspectives. And I think actually the sort of variety of knowledge and expertise is one of the great things about the way God's made the world and made people. And one of the blessings of working at the university is seeing the way that different people understand the world. I thought I would give an example, though, of one area where I see a concordance between my faith and science, and that's in the orderliness of the world. So I'm biased, but I'm going to say that's best seen in mathematics. So I think I have a little comic coming up. If someone laughs next to you, it's because they're identifying themselves as a bit of a nerd. But yeah, I think mathematics really is both kind of beautiful in the abstract, but also really useful. So an example might seem kind of obscure, but there's no such thing as a true circle in our world. We can't create a perfect circle. No attempt is going to be perfectly circular. You know, I could ask a few of you, you know, put your chairs together in a circle and you have a go, but it's not going to be a perfect circle. And yet the concept of the circle, you would understand exactly what I meant. You know, artists think circles are beautiful and they incorporate them in their art. And things that are circular are really useful, like wheels and things like that, our attempts at makeshift circles. And so we believe that there exists this kind of concept of a circle that's got this kind of powerful form, but also is useful. And I think that shouldn't surprise us, that sort of idea that there's concepts and forms and patterns in our world that exist, if we believe in a transcendent God who is actually consistent and who values order. So we should actually expect to observe, the kind of systems and patterns in the world that we do.
So if someone comes up to you and says, I could never be a Christian because I believe in science, how would you respond to them?
I actually wish I got that question more than I do. I think I find that my colleagues more often think that Christianity is not relevant rather than kind of contradictory. And thinking it's contradictory, that's more likely to lead to a good conversation, actually. It's a better opening. But if I do get a question like this, I guess the first thing I'd want to do is try to unpack what it is about Christianity and science that they're grappling with, that they're having trouble reconciling. Because, as I said, I think they exist fairly comfortably, but I agree that there are kind of areas of tension, whether they're perceived or otherwise. So, a couple of examples. So, obviously, the area of evolution is one that comes up a lot and related to that, how old the Earth is. And that's caused tension for a long time, and particularly, sadly, it's caused conflict within the church, which I think is really tragic. But I think the accounts of God's creation, I think they're flexible to a range of positions on this issue. And even historically, we can see that people have interpreted Genesis differently in this way. And particularly thinking about it from a scientific point of view is quite a modern thing to do, and that's a cultural thing, that we're very scientific kind of generation. But yeah, I think even the fact that Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 have like two different accounts of the creation from different perspectives, I think that helps us to imagine that, you know, there are different ways to think about it. And I think when we read it, we should be trying to think, well, what is it actually that God wants to communicate? So I think the emphasis is on the fact that God is the one doing the creating, that he's happy with what he creates, he's satisfied with it. And I think the importance of humans and the seriousness of their responsibility for creation, they're the kinds of things, our relational nature to each other and God being relational, I think they're kinds of, they're the things that we really should be looking for in Genesis. They're the actual answers. And so I think, you know, an old earth and some form of evolution for which we have scientific evidence, I think they're not in conflict with that sort of a reading of Genesis. So that's one example that comes up a lot that I'm sure you guys have thought about. Another one that I've come across, people say the idea of miracles or divine interaction, intervention, that's at odds with the scientific worldview, that the kind of laws that God's placed that I mentioned before, that they can't exist with kind of God intervening. But whenever we define a scientific system, we're always assuming it's closed. So for the laws to apply consistently, the system is closed. And as soon as we intervene, well, that changes things. So, you know, if I had a ball and I dropped it, you know, the law of gravity would apply. But if I dropped it and you caught it, well, it wouldn't be that, you know, gravity doesn't exist or that, you know, you've defied the laws of gravity. You've just intervened in that system and changed that. So I think God can certainly do that supernaturally. He can intervene in his world without undoing the kind of good laws that he's put in place as well. And the Bible teaches that God's part of sustaining those laws at the same time. The one thing I did want to say, you know, if someone's asking you how, you know, to deal with the tension or they're not sure, one of the things to recognise is they probably don't have a very good understanding of Christianity either. And so I just encourage you to get them reading the Bible. I'm reading the Bible at the moment with a couple of girls who aren't Christians, and it's just been fantastic seeing the penny drop as they understand things and they teach me things because they're looking at it with fresh eyes. So, yeah, if people say to you that they want to understand the world and the Bible and how they fit together, just open the Bible with them, I say. You don't have to be a theologian to do it. You can read it together and, you know, ask questions of each other. And I would encourage you to, when someone asks you a question like that, to come back at them with that suggestion.
And what would you say to some of the young people here tonight who are studying science or perhaps they're thinking about studying science? Is it a godly pursuit?
I think God loves scientists. I think the curiosity that you have for the world, I think that's not an accident. I think there's great delight in understanding how things work, and there's a lot of opportunity to do good in the world by understanding it better. So, yeah, in terms of whether it's godly or ungodly to study science, I think like any pursuit, you can do it for godly and ungodly reasons, and there are ungodly and godly ways to go about it. So probably what I'd say, there are two ways I would think about it, how I would approach it, and one is with humility and the other is with hope. And this is true of any pursuit, but I think science in particular, if we approach it with humility, we're more likely to be aware that actually we are prone to sin, and when we search for truth, we may get it wrong. If all you need to do is look back at popular science textbooks of the past to realise that we've got it wrong before. So it's good for us to be aware of that and to try to be faithful in what we're doing. I also think humility is important because it reminds us that we can learn from each other. And I think science is a really powerful tool for understanding the world, but I think there's a danger because of that we think it's the only source of knowledge. In fact, you know, kind of this discussion, which is actually more philosophy of science than science, no one taught me that in my science degree. It wasn't covered. It's more reading the work of philosophers and historians and theologians, sociologists, all this kind of stuff that actually helps inform us. So as Christians in science, I think we have an opportunity to highlight that, to say there is more to knowledge than just kind of a narrow scientism. And you know, for example, we can fight for ethics in science, which is not, science itself is not going to give us an ethical framework, but from the Bible we can come up with ethical principles for carrying out science. And so that's an example where, yeah, if we're able to be humble and look at the work of others, then we're going to do our science better as well. humility is important. The other thing I think we have as Christians in science is that we have hope, because we can be confident that God's made a world that fits together, so we actually expect it to be understood. And that's what motivated the early scientists, was an understanding of a God who made the world, and therefore we expect to see patterns and predictability. I think we also have hope that we know that God wants to reveal himself to us through his word and through his world. So in doing that, we'll understand him better, and we'll also be able to serve him better and love and serve each other better as well.